Today's program is going to consist of the structure of the Federal Reserve from publications from the Federal Reserve itself. Don't ask me what the publications are. I don't think any of them are available from the various Federal Reserve banks now. I just have them in my notes, and my collection of notes started 30 years ago. But as you will soon hear, there isn't much of what I will be saying that is derogatory about the Federal Reserve System. Before we get into the structure of the Federal Reserve, a question has arisen. How did the banks clear checks before the Federal Reserve was in operation? Well, they did it with clearinghouses. A clearinghouse was simply the association of banks. They used a common agency or facility to clear their checks or drafts on each other's banks. The clearinghouse matched debits and credits arising from these checks or drafts and then credited or debited the account of the particular member bank accordingly. This procedure economized time and cash in settling accounts. Then, on December 23, 1913, President Woodrow Wilson signed the Federal Reserve Act establishing the Federal Reserve System. The Federal Reserve System did not begin operations until November 16, 1914. It was then that Paul Warburg said, "This date may be considered as the 4th of July in the economic history of the United States." By the end of 1914, 12 Federal Reserve banks had been established under the supervision of a central body designated as the Federal Reserve Board. It's now called the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, and it was and still is headquartered in Washington, D.C. It was, according to its preamble, an act to provide for the establishment of Federal Reserve banks, to furnish an elastic currency, to afford means of discounting commercial paper, to establish a more effective supervision of banking in the United States, and other purposes. Section 4 of the new statute charged the Federal Reserve banks with making such discounts, advancements, and accommodations as may be safely and reasonably made with due regard for the maintenance of sound credit conditions, and the accommodations of commerce, industry, and agriculture. A distinguishing feature of the Federal Reserve System is its structure, which has an effective combination of public and private interests designed to promote the general welfare. At the base of the structure are the nation's depository institutions, member and non-member commercial banks, savings and loan associations, saving banks, and credit unions. Next are the 12 Federal Reserve banks and their 25 branches. They are partly autonomous but are under the general supervision of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. In March 1980, President Carter signed into law the Depository Institutions Deregulation and Monetary Control Act. This was perhaps the most sweeping financial legislation since the Depression-born laws of the 1930s. The law affected virtually all the nation's depository institutions and extended Federal Reserve services and reserve requirements to non-member banks, savings and loans associations, savings banks, and credit unions that have transaction accounts or non-personal time deposits. The Act was designed to eliminate many of the competitive inequities between member banks and other depository institutions, provide uniform and universal reserve requirements, and promote more effective monetary policy actions. As before the passage of the new Act, membership in the Federal Reserve System is voluntary, except for national banks, which are required by law to be members. State chartered banks are admitted upon application if they meet certain requirements. member banks subscribe to Federal Reserve Bank stock in the amount of 6% of their own capital and surplus. At the end of the year, the member banks receive a cumulative dividend of 6% in their paid-in stock. Stock ownership also qualifies the member banks to elect 6 of the 9 directors of the Federal Reserve Banks of their district. The member banks do not, however, have the other rights and privileges normally associated with stock ownership. For example, they may not sell their Reserve Bank stock, and if the Reserve Banks were closed and liquidated, the remaining assets would go to the U.S. Treasury, not to the stockholders. Each Federal Reserve Bank is a separately incorporated institution having its own board of directors. Directors of a Reserve Bank are 9 in numbers, divided into 3 classes of 3 each, designated classes A, B, and C. Class A directors are elected by the stockholding banks and represent such banks. The banks also elect Class B directors. The Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System appoints the Class C directors, one of whom is designated as chairman and Federal Reserve agent, and another as deputy chairman. Class B and C directors both represent the general public and are chosen with due but not exclusive regard to the interest of agriculture, commerce, industry, labor, and services in their district. No B or C director may be an officer, director, employee, or stockholder of any bank. For the purpose of electing Class A and Class B directors, the member banks are divided into 3 groups representing large banks, middle-sized banks, and small banks, respectively. Each group elects 1 Class A and 1 Class B director. Most of the Federal Reserve Bank branches have a board of directors of 7 members. 4 are appointed by the bank's board of directors, and 3 are appointed from non-banking fields by the Board of Governors. The Federal Reserve System is self-sustaining and is not dependent upon appropriations by the federal government. Income of the system is derived primarily from interest on U.S. government securities that the Federal Reserve has acquired through open market operations. This is one of the tools of monetary policy. While not operated for profit, the Federal Reserve Banks not only pay their own way, but turn over to the Treasury of the United States, after payment of expenses and dividends, all earnings over and above that amount required to maintain a surplus equal to their paid-in capital. These varied arrangements for regional representation, election of directors, and distribution of profits emphasize the unique character of the Federal Reserve Banks as organizations occupying a position that is partly private enterprise and partly government. But the Federal Reserve has never had a complete audit. The Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, with headquarters in Washington, D.C., consists of 7 members who are appointed to their post by the President of the United States, subject to confirmation by the Senate. Appointments to the board are for terms of 14 years, with one term expiring by the provision that no Federal Reserve District may have more than 1 member. Operating expenses of the board are defrayed from assessments levied upon the Federal Reserve Banks. Quite literally, the Board of Governors represents the essential link between government and our private enterprise banking system. In influencing the country's money supply toward the goal of stable economic progress, the Board of Governors plays the primary role through its authority over changes in member bank reserve requirements, its participation in open market operations, and its approval of changes in discount rates at the Federal Reserve Banks. The Board issues regulations, passes on budgets of the Federal Reserve Banks, coordinates system research and publications, supervises research bank accounting procedures, and directs bank examination procedures. In system matters that involve relations with executive departments or with congressional committee, the board serves as representatives of the system. Of great importance in the Federal Reserve structure is the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. It consists of the members of the Board of Governors and the presidents of five reserve banks. The president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York is a permanent member of the Federal Open Market Committee, while the other reserve bank presidents serve on a rotating basis. Federal Reserve open market operations, for which the committee is solely responsible, represent the most important single instrument of credit control. The committee's purchase of government securities increased the reserve available to the nation's depository institutions, making it possible for them to lend more money. Sales of government securities by the Federal Open Market Committee have directly the opposite effect. Such purchases and sales are authorized by the committee with sole regard to the business and credit needs of the country. Federal open market operations are the purchase and sales of government securities and other securities carried out by the Federal Reserve. They take place at the New York Federal Reserve Bank. They create the money out of nothing to purchase these securities and to pay their expenses. The Federal Open Market Committee is the most important monetary policy-making body of the Federal Reserve System. It is responsible for the formulation of a policy designed to promote economic growth, full employment, stable prices, and a balance in international trade payments. The Federal Open Market Committee makes key decisions regarding the conduct of open market operations, purchases and sales of U.S. government and other securities, which affect the provision of reserves to the banking system and, in turn, the cost and availability of credit in the United States economy. By statute, the committee determines its own organization. At its first meeting on or after March 1st of each year, the committee elects staff officers to serve the committee for the coming year. Traditionally, the chairman of the Board of Governors is elected as chairman and the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York as vice chairman. Staff officers are selected from among the officers and employees of the Board of Governors and the Federal Reserve Banks. Officers include a secretary to maintain a record of actions taken by the committee upon all questions of policy, an economist to prepare and present to the committee information regarding business and credit conditions and domestic and international economic and financial developments. They also have a general counsel to furnish such legal advice as the committee may require, and a manager and deputy managers of the system for the open market account to execute open market transactions and to report to the committee on market conditions. The law requires that meetings of the Federal Open Market Committee be held at least 4 times each year in Washington, D.C., or upon the call of the chairman of the Board of Governors, or at the request of any 3 members of the committee. Typically, meetings are held once every 4 to 6 weeks in the offices of the Board of Governors in Washington, according to a schedule tentatively agreed upon at the beginning of the year. If circumstances require consultation or consideration of an action between these regular meetings, members may be called on to participate in a special meeting or a telephone conference, or to vote on a recommended action by telegram or telephone. At each regular meeting, the committee votes on the policy to be carried out during the interval between meetings. At least twice a year, the committee also votes on certain longer-run policy objectives. Attendance at meetings is restricted because of the confidential nature of financial information discussed and is limited to committee members, non-member Reserve Bank presidents, staff officers, the manager and deputy manager of the system account, and a small number of Board of Reserve Bank staff. In this way, the public is never informed of the directive currently in effect. Decisions with regard to open market operations are made by the 12-member Federal Open Market Committee. This committee, which meets in Washington about 8 times a year, consists of 7 of the members of the Board of Governors, the President of the Federal Reserve of New York, and the President of 4 other reserve banks who serve in rotation. The council consists of 1 member from each Federal Reserve District selected by the Reserve Bank Boards of Directors. It confers periodically with the Board of Governors on business conditions and makes advisory recommendation on affairs of the system. In some ways, the Federal Reserve Bank services to depository institutions are similar to depository institutions' services to their customers, accepting and safeguarding deposits, transferring funds, providing cash, and making loans. All but the very smallest depository institutions are subject to reserve requirements if they offer check-type accounts or certain other accounts. These reserves may be in the form of vault cash or in a reserve account. A depository institution's reserve account at a Federal Reserve Bank may also be used much like an ordinary checking account. Most of the nation's spending money is in the form of demand deposits. That's deposits in checking accounts. Checks are the most common means of spending demand deposits, although electronic transfers are gaining in use. About 90% of the dollar volume of spending in the United States is done by checks or electronic transfers. Frequently, a check is cashed or deposited at a depository institution far distant from the institution on which it is drawn. Typically, such checks are collected through the Federal Reserve's check collection system. High-speed computer-controlled machines at Federal Reserve offices sort them out, total the amounts, credit the depositing institution, and charge the institution on which they are drawn. The checks are then sent to the latter depository institution. Electronic fund transfers and automatic clearinghouse are relatively new terms that relate to computerized transfers of funds. Unlike a check, which may travel thousands of miles in several days and be processed and reprocessed many times, an electronic transfer can do the same job in seconds with no paper to mail and all processing done by computers. The sophisticated computer-based federal communications system makes these operations possible. Although checkbook dollars and electronic fund transfers account for most of the dollar volume of spending, cash money in the form of coins and notes still plays an important role as a medium of exchange. Newly minted coins and newly printed notes are shipped from the United States Treasury to the Federal Reserve Banks. There the cash is stored until needed to fill orders from depository institutions. Depository institutions, of course, furnish cash to businesses and to the public. When depository institutions have excess cash on hand, they may return it to the federal banks. There the amount is verified and worn-out notes are destroyed. Counterfeits are removed and sent to the Secret Service. Worn out, bent, and foreign coins, too, are called out. Reusable coins and notes are stored until needed. When depository institutions order cash, the reserve banks fill the orders from their stocks of new and used coins and notes. Depository institutions occasionally find themselves temporarily short of reserves. Unexpected credit demands, deposit drains, or seasonal economic factors can cause such reserve shortages. At such times, they may be eligible to borrow from the reserve banks. Generally, Federal Reserve loans are made for short periods, from one day up to several weeks, to help the borrowers adjust their reserve positions. Long ago, banks had windows through which borrowers' notes were discounted. Now the term discount window is just a figure of speech, but still commonly used. Commercial banks are governed by a variety of regulations intended to make sure they serve their depositors and communities well and are operated in accordance with sound banking principles. Several federal and state agencies share the responsibility for examining banks to determine their compliance with these regulations. Federal Reserve banks examine and regulate state chartered banks that are members of the Federal Reserve System. They also examine bank holding companies and international banking operations within the United States. In addition, Reserve banks monitor commercial banks' compliance with consumer protection laws relating to credit, such as truth in lending. Reserve bank specialists help banks interpret technical requirements of the laws. They also provide information and assistance to consumers with questions or complaints regarding the services of commercial banks. The Reserve banks provide a number of banking and financial services to the United States Treasury, including two major services. One is incoming federal government revenues, which are credited to the Treasury's accounts at the Reserve banks. The government spends these funds primarily by issuing checks to automated clearinghouse entries such as Social Security and Armed Services payroll checks or electronic fund transfer payments. These checks or entries are submitted for collection to the Reserve banks, where they are charged against the Treasury's account. When its current expenses run ahead of its current cash resources, the Treasury borrows. It does this mostly by auctioning government securities to investors. The auctions are held by the Reserve banks acting as the Treasury's fiscal or financial agents. The Reserve banks also supervise the sale of the familiar U.S. savings bonds through depository institutions and other issuing agents. The Reserve banks and the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System together develop monetary policy. The objectives are to protect the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar, encourage conditions favorable to sustainable economic growth and a high level of employment, and foster a reasonable balance in transactions with other nations over the long run. The Federal Reserve System contributes to these objectives through its actions affecting the amount and cost of money and credit. Other major influences on the economy include federal taxation, government spending, and decisions by the general public, particularly businessmen. Decisions affecting monetary policy must be based on accurate and current economic and financial information. Once gathered, this information must be analyzed and interpreted, then meaningfully related to other data in order to adjust policy to changing conditions. The resulting economic analysis is used by the Federal Open Market Committee. At the monthly meetings of the Federal Open Market Committee, the seven members of the system's boards of governor and the Reserve Bank presidents adjust the system's monetary policy to the ever-changing economic conditions. Neither the Congress, the Secretary of the Treasury, nor the President of the United States determines the amount of money the Federal Reserve System creates, destroys, or is kept in the economy. Well, now you have it straight from the horse's mouth. What you have just heard has all come from the Federal Reserve itself. I didn't make this up. The United States government may appoint the chairman of the Federal Reserve, but the bankers tell the president which small groups they select which can be the chairman. Hope this didn't bore you all too much, unless you suffer from insomnia. If you do, this may have cured you. Since World War I and the Russian Revolutions, all countries have had central banks. Some people think the heads of the central banks are omnipotent. But if you do, here's what Carol Quigley has to say. Quote, "It must not be felt that these heads of the world's chief central banks were themselves substantive owners in world finance. They were not. Rather, they were the technicians and agents of the dominant investment beings of their own countries, who had raised them up and were perfectly capable of throwing them down. The substantive financial powers of the world were in the hands of these investment bankers, also called international bankers or merchant bankers, who remained largely behind the scenes in their own unincorporated private banks. These formed a system of international cooperation and national dominance which was more private, more powerful, and more secret than that of their agents in central banks. These men maintained the power, even though the banks may have become theoretically socialized." The next program will deal with banking and World War I. I hope you can join me then, and let me remind you, if you haven't already, get in touch with the American Monetary Institute. You can reach it right on your computer. This is the Old Scotsman saying thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on KKK Radio.